With Spring Black Friday deals at the Home Depot, you can give your lawn or garden beds a pop of color and protection. Right now, get a special buy on Scott's Earth Grow Mulch, 5 bags for just $10. Help your soil retain moisture longer with color that lasts up to 12 months. Shop Spring Black Friday deals for a special buy on Scott's Earth Grow Mulch, 5 bags for just $10 at the Home Depot. How doers get more done. Color selection varies by store. Limit 60 bags per customer while supplies last.
With the Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card, you can earn unlimited 2% cash rewards on purchases you want and purchases you need. That means you earn on what you want, like trying out that new workout class, and 2% cash rewards on what you need, like a foam roller for your sore muscles. That's the beauty of the Active Cash Credit Card. It's ready when you are, with unlimited 2% cash rewards. The Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card. That's real life ready. Terms apply. Learn more at wellsfargo.com/activecash.
Welcome to the Peter King Podcast. It's the first podcast, I think, with my co-host Miles Simmons, where we're both in California at the same time. I covered the NFC Championship game on Sunday. As we record this on Monday, I am still in California, going to hang around and do a couple things out here for my column next week. And so I decided, let's just record this today. We'll get it out. And our guest this week is going to be Brock Purdy. I spent some time with him after the game on Sunday. And it's going to be a little bit of a different feel for a guest. And because I'm just going to play 3 sound bites from my conversation with him and sort of lead into those bites. But anyway, you'll hear it. It was fun. It was interesting. Miles, I find myself very, very interested in both of these games, but particularly the strategic elements of game 2 of the NFC Championship game. And I think we really have to dive in on that. The first half of our pod, we'll discuss the NFC game. Second half, we'll discuss the AFC game. Brock Purdy will be the bridge to those. Then we'll give you just a quickie Super Bowl preview before Miles and I are both in Las Vegas next week when we will record the Peter King podcast there. So having said all of that, Miles, let's just get to the big part of what seems to have really lit America on fire, and that is Dan Campbell's coaching decisions in the second half of this game. So let's get exactly what the situations were, Miles, and let's discuss each of the fourth down calls by Dan Campbell. Okay, the first one. With the Lions up 24-10 midway through the third quarter, they had a 4th-and-2 at the San Francisco 28. So Dan Campbell has a choice. He could either go for it on 4th down on 4th-and-2, or he could try to kick a field goal. It would be a 46-yard field goal with Michael Badgley. Now, I've read and heard a lot about, well, Michael Badgley's a lousy kicker, whatever. Well, I went back and looked at it, and Michael Badgley is not bad. In the last 3 seasons, he's made 18 of 22 field goal attempts in the 40s, from 40 to 49 yards. That's 82%. It's not automatic. It's pretty good. And I must emphasize, being in the stadium in Santa Clara, California, Sunday night, it was absolutely beautiful. No weather, no wind, about maybe 68 degrees. It was just a perfect night for anything. And they happened to be playing a football game. So anyway, he chose to go for it. Obviously, Jared Goff threw an incompletion to Josh Reynolds. Now, some are calling it a drop. I wouldn't. It was a hard ball to catch, but he probably should have caught it. But anyway, it's incomplete. Turn the ball over on downs. Your thoughts on the call?
No, I really didn't mind it at the time. And, I understand that you're going up, excuse me, by three possessions. Excuse me, if you make that field goal.
Yeah.
But at the time, right? And you, if you are able to get down the field and score a touchdown, then you almost effectively in the game. And
Yes.
with what the Detroit Lions have done throughout the course of the season, it did not surprise me that they went for it. And you're still up by two touchdowns at that point. So that's why, in my mind, that's a place where you can be aggressive and kind of go for that kill shot where, yeah, if you get more points with the field goal, it is what it is. Like, that's good to go up by three possessions, certainly, but it doesn't give you that whole thing of, hey, man, we have come here to take this. Right. We're not just going to sit back and maybe rest and then see if something does or doesn't happen. Right. Like that to me is just not what the Lions' philosophy has been. If it's more than fourth and two, then I think you think about kicking it more. But at that point, especially because you're up by two touchdowns, I really didn't mind them going for it. Problem is, of course, when you don't execute. Right. And that to
Yeah.
me is the biggest problem there.
So I really thought Campbell was justified going for it here, and I'll tell you why.
Okay.
The obviously you're right. You're up 14 points. You have a chance to go up three touchdowns on the road in the NFC Championship game. And I agree with you. If you score there, you can look at the final score and you could say, well, look at the 49ers. They came back. They may have come back. I understand that. But there's a lot of difference between a 14-point lead with a quarter and a half to go against the Kyle Shanahan offense and a 21-point lead. So and I think also the Lions at that point are still riding the wave of a dominant first half of this game.
Yes,
This was their
yes.
first possession of the third quarter. So I don't in any way begrudge Campbell for going for this. And keep in mind, Dan Campbell went for it on fourth down this year 24% of the time. And that's the most in the NFL in at least 20 years. So this is, again, it's who he is. But we're gonna morph into the second one now, or transition into the second one, and I'm going to tell you why I disagreed with this call. And I've heard and I've read, hey, this is who Dan Campbell is. You change who you are based on the game situation.
Yes.
All right, so here was the second one. All right, this now we are now the game has totally turned. The 49ers have scored 17 points on their next three possessions. The game is now tied, or I'm sorry, excuse me. The 49ers are now up 27 to 24. And I think this next series is crucial for the Lions. They got to the 30-yard line of San Francisco, fourth and three, 3 yards. And I went back and I watched the replay after the game. And it was a good 3 yards. It might have been 3 yards and a foot after Amon-Ra St. Brown, was caught a ball on third down and got within 3 yards of the sticks. So now it's fourth and three, and here's the difference, right? It is midway through the fourth quarter. Now you may only have after this. You may only have one possession left. So you have to decide. I need to at least tie this game. Now, you know what? It's very interesting. Coaches don't often tell you, Miles, exactly why they did something. And maybe he didn't have faith in Michael Badgley. But all I can say is this: in 2024, if you don't think your kicker in calm, pristine conditions can make a 48-yard field goal, That's on you. That's your fault for putting this guy on the team. So I'm assuming at that moment that he's probably going to make a 48-yard field goal if he tries. But be all that as it may, he chose to go for it again. And in my opinion, Jared Goff made an awful throw again to Amon-Ra St. Brown, but he was way off. He was flush from the pocket, and so it didn't work. And honestly, that to me was a gigantic play in this game. I would have kicked the field goal here. Your thoughts?
Well, I didn't blame Campbell for shooting a 48-yard field goal because I, as much as we think, and Peter, I do think you're right. If you're in a postseason situation, you're in the NFC Championship game, and you don't trust your kicker to make a 48-yard field goal, that's a problem, right? You have to be able to hit from 48 or from 50 on in, let's say, if you're in the postseason. And if you don't have a kicker that you can trust to do that, that's an issue. So then if that's the case, like the Detroit Lions absolutely need to address kicker in the offseason. But I still don't think 48's quite a gimme. And
It's
I
not a gimme. You're
understood,
right.
yeah,
You're right.
so I understood what it was that they were trying to do in terms of going for it there. But when you're down three and you have a chance to tie the game, you probably do need to tie the game in the fourth quarter in what that situation is midway through the final period of the NFC Championship game. Like I see it from both sides, but I would lean toward, yeah, you really should have kicked the field goal there. Whereas earlier on in the game, like I understand the going for it because you're still up by two touchdowns. But Peter, you know, what I think is getting lost in this discourse over Dan Campbell's decisions is that Jahmyr Gibbs fumbled away a possession
Yeah.
in the in deep in Detroit territory right after the 49ers had scored. And so to me, like that's why where you go for it earlier on and you're like, yeah, we're still up by two touchdowns. We have the opportunity to get back on the horse and still go stay up by two touchdowns, even if they take this and they go down the field and score. Because you have a fumble right there, you totally lost the momentum of what you were doing. Like that to me is the real key play. And you know, yes, Campbell deserves some criticism, but and I don't want to kill a rookie running back for one mistake either. But like that right there, when you fumble in your own territory on the first play of a drive, like
Yep.
that is where they Detroit really started to lose that game, in my opinion.
You know, Miles, agree with you on this, and there was a commonality to these two games, and that is a first round rookie for each team that lost made a gigantic error in each one of the games. Jahmyr Gibbs in the 49er game, and obviously Zay Flowers with really the mistake of the year for the Baltimore Ravens. And you can't say they would have won the game if he doesn't fumble at the, I'm serious, the 10-inch line.
Right.
I Zapruder filmed that, and we'll talk about that on the other side. But I looked at that for a long time, and it looked like it was about a foot. Might have been closer than a foot. But anyway, the rookies, I think, even though they had great impact this year, man, both of them really hurt their team, late in these games. The one other thing I really wanted to talk about with this game, what I find so interesting about football as a sport is how much can happen in 60 minutes of a game. And I'll give you my case in point. At the 49ers game. So I'm at Levi's Stadium. I'm trying to bang out some stuff at halftime. And just before the start of the second half, I say, man, got to use the men's room. And so I go into the men's room. And now remember, the Lions are up 24-7 at halftime, and it's not looking good for the home team. And, it's a little crowded in the men's room. And one of the guys using a urinal kind of yelled out, "Who's got odds on the 49ers opening day quarterback next year, Purdy or Kirk Cousins?" So, I mean, it was just sort of a funny thing to say, and I didn't think anything of it until after the game. I'm thinking, Brock Purdy just really changed the narrative. It's not, he didn't, it wasn't that greatest half a quarterback's ever made. But the fact is, the 49ers were down 24-7 at the half, and they scored 27 points in the second half to come back and win and to earn this Super Bowl trip. Props to Brock Purdy, man. And I just wanted to get your take on what you saw out of him in the second half.
I like to say that Brock Purdy has got some stuff to him. Like he's the kind of guy that you want on your team because you feel like it's never going to completely go off the rails, usually, right? I mean, it did in that Baltimore game, right? Like that's the one where you're like, man, he just that one was non-competitive. But what he does for you is he allows guys to make plays, and when things go off, right? And usually they don't in a Kyle Shanahan offense, but when he has to make an off-schedule play, he can make it. And he showed that, you know, by running the ball with making the plays with his legs when he had to. And, you know, you look at the two quarterbacks in that game specifically, right? One drafted number one overall, Jared Goff, obviously in 2016. The other drafted last pick in the draft a couple years ago. And Brock Purdy is the one who has the mobility. And that mobility, I thought, was really the difference in the game. And because, look, when
It
Jared
was.
Goff had things break down for him, the protection started breaking down and he got pressured and he had to get flushed out. And you just brought it up, Peter, that fourth down throw, like it was totally off. And Jared Goff just does not necessarily have that ability, unfortunately, to like make those kinds of plays with his legs where he's bouncing around the pocket, he sees a lane, and boom, he goes and hits it. Like that's not his game. He is a pocket passer, which is fine. I mean, obviously it works for him in many situations, but what Brock Purdy can do for you is if the protection breaks down, if the play doesn't quite go the way it's supposed to on schedule, he can still make something happen for you. And that's something we see with Patrick Mahomes, right? Josh Allen, Joe Burrow has a good ability to do it too. These guys that are the top quarterbacks, Lamar Jackson, obviously, right? But when Brock Purdy does it, it's like, oh, whatever. Like for many people, it seems like. But I like that ability that he has because it is what has made the difference in the San Francisco offense. Right? Like, think about what we used to see with this team from Jimmy Garoppolo. Garoppolo did not have that ability. And I think now that Purdy does, that's what's taken this thing to another level. And it's a big reason why they are now in the Super Bowl for the second time under Shanahan.
You know, after the game, Kyle Shanahan was blunt about it. He goes, basically, those runs were the difference in the game. And Trent Williams told me after the game at his locker, he's the reason we're headed to the Super Bowl. And I think in all of the criticisms of Brock Purdy, I think there are, I would say, three traits that he has that all the great quarterbacks have. Okay. And that's number one, he is an accurate passer compared to all other NFL quarterbacks. I would call his accuracy an 8 or a 9. And he's accurate also when pressured. Remember the pass he threw, it was almost a little flip where he's running to his left and it looks like he's just going to run out of bounds and it'll probably be called a sack. But at the last minute, he just sort of flips it awkwardly. Kyle Juszczyk catches the ball and gets both feet in at the sideline for a ridiculous play. And it was a first down. Kyle Juszczyk just barely made a first down. It was a gain of 10. And that is kind of what Brock Purdy does. That's one trait. Second trait, plays his best when the best is required. And look, they're down 17 at the half. If you're a good quarterback, you have got to be able, you're not going to do it every time, but you have to have the presence and the calm and the it factor to be able to bring your team back. He's done that a couple of times now in his time as Niners quarterback. And I think the last thing is you really have to be a flatliner. I marvel at Brock Purdy's ability to essentially not let anything in the outside world have any impact whatsoever. He talked about it during his press conference, not to me, but he talked about it in his press conference. And look, we can talk about God. We can talk about the effect of religion in people's lives and all that, but it really doesn't matter. Religion is an intensely, personal thing. And last night after the game, Brock Purdy talked about how I just put it on God. I have this abiding faith, and whatever happens, I know we're going to be fine. My job is to put everything I have into this moment. And, as he said, I've done a good job of being where my feet are. And I think that aspect of his life makes all these people in the outside world saying, oh, he stinks, or he's a marginal player, or whatever. He just doesn't care. And I really kind of admire that in him. Whatever you think of his religious beliefs, it doesn't matter. He is emboldened and gets his flatlining capabilities from that. And as I say, it doesn't matter what anybody else thinks. It matters what Brock Purdy thinks. And it also matters that that ethos, that way of living, helps him compartmentalize everything in his life and to devote all his energy when he's on the field to being a good football player and not listening to any of the garbage.
It's interesting, Peter, because I think people like criticizing Brock Purdy because, like, there are things to criticize, right? I mean, there his play, obviously, in the divisional round against Green Bay for three quarters was not up to par, right? I would say that his play in the first two quarters of last night's game, not up to par. But
Absolutely.
when you can turn it on and you can still lead your team to wins and two victories, right? Like, that is the most important thing, right? And I like to talk about the fact that Patrick Mahomes, the floor with him for a team is losing in overtime of the conference title game. Well, through 2 years, the floor for Brock Purdy is losing in the conference title game because his arm got hurt. Like, he's done nothing but win. And wins are not always a quarterback stat, but I do think that he has earned a lot of credit for what he's been able to execute as part of Kyle Shanahan's offense.
I think I've talked about this on the show before in one episode or another, but I remember as Brock Purdy was getting his start in December of 22, he just had played two or three games. And I remember talking to George Kittle about him. And Kittle said it helped him not because I made the point to him that, hey, it, just my thought, but I think he's really helped by the fact that he played 46 games, started 46 games at a Power Five school. Iowa State in the Big 12, and he's played in front of 100,000 at Texas and in front of 90,000 at Oklahoma. He's played a lot of those big games. And Kittle interrupted me and he goes, you're forgetting one thing. He said, it's great to play at a place like Iowa State because you're not that good. I mean, Iowa State traditionally hasn't been that good. There are no gimmies. You got to be on your horse every week that you play because it's difficult to win in a big way at Iowa State. So I really thought that was a good add to the story of why Purdy has started off and done pretty well. And look, Miles, I have no idea how it's going to go in a couple of weeks when he plays Patrick Mahomes. But I don't think the game's going to be too big for him. I think he's going to go out and play a football game. And it's easy to say that now because he's playing against a guy who, Patrick Mahomes has been on this stage his whole career. So it's not going to be the biggest deal for him. But my feeling is that Purdy is going to represent himself well in this game. We'll see what happens. But I think his story is absolutely fabulous. And it just goes to show you that do not assume that because either you played at Iowa State and you didn't play for one of the real big boys, or because you're the 262nd pick in the draft, that you can't do it. I mean, Brock Purdy is living proof that you can.
I'm into that. Yeah, I love it. And that's one of the things I love about football. You can come from anywhere. It doesn't matter how you get there. And coaches say this all the time, but after the draft, they tell rookies, it doesn't matter how you got here or you're here
Yeah.
now. And so the only thing that matters is what's next and what you do and what you make of the opportunity. And I mean, no matter what you say about Brock Purdy, you cannot say that he has not taken advantage of every opportunity that he's been
Yeah.
given in the
Yeah.
NFL.
Right. And in college football, quite
Yep.
honestly, he's living, breathing proof that if you have an opportunity, you take advantage. I mean, look, this guy is the definition of cherubic. And he looks like he's 16 years old, and you wonder if he owns a razor, because he may not need one. But anyway, I think it's just a really cool story, and I like telling it. Miles, let's go into my conversation after the game with Purdy in the bowels of this stadium in a PR office. At Levi's Stadium, I think he'll enjoy some of his observations about where he's come from and how this game went. After that, we're going to take a break. And then on the other side of the podcast, we will come back with thoughts on the Kansas City Chiefs steamrolling again to another Super Bowl. So that's the lineup for the rest of the pod. Let's listen to Brock Purdy about his life and about the biggest win of his life. So let me set the stage for you a little bit with my conversation with Brock Purdy after the NFC Championship game. Basically, what happens in these games is that guys, for instance, Brock, in this case, Brock Purdy and Kyle Shanahan, they were very delayed in getting into the press conferences post game because of the celebration on the field. And then they all were in the locker room. And so they didn't even come out till like an hour or so after the game. So after that happened, then I walked with Purdy to a PR office of the 49ers right across the hall from their locker room at Levi's Stadium. So I sat in there with Brock Purdy for, I think, 8 minutes and talked to him a little bit. And I thought that the best way to get into it with him is the way that just to say, man, the last draft pick in college and now you're going to the Super Bowl to play the great Mahomes. So I asked him about that. Here were his thoughts.
It's been a roller coaster, really. You finish your senior year in college, you get drafted last, and you think maybe there's no shot here, to all of a sudden there is. You made the team, to you're a backup, to you're getting thrown in, to obviously being one win away from going to the Super Bowl your rookie year. You tear your arm, and then you go through the rehab process, you make it back. Then you go through some good times in the season. You go through some times that are tough with the three losses that we had in a row, the performance on Christmas Day. There's just it's a roller coaster, man. And so I've just tried to do my best to take it one day at a time and be where my feet are at, whether it's going good or not. I'm not defined by my circumstances, and more than anything, I just try to have a grateful mindset, and that's allowed me to sort of enjoy this last year and a half.
Then I asked him about the plays that Kyle Shanahan said were basically the differences in the game. And that was three plays in the last 22 minutes of the game that Brock Purdy ran for a total of 52 yards. And he's not a runner. He had only had one 50-yard running game in his entire NFL career to that point, I think 25 games or something. And so talking to him about sort of his strategy of, you know, you got to know when to hold them, know when to fold them, when to take off, I thought was interesting.
Yeah, I mean, obviously I drop back first and read the defense. I'm trying to hit my receivers. That's like the point of playing quarterback. But when, you know, they do a good job with the coverage or blitzes, and then I see some space in that moment in this game with the stakes, like what they're at, and, you know, being in the NFC Championship game, it's like, all right, you got to find a way, man. I know that I'm athletic enough to be able to move the chains and to obviously keep it rolling and create some juice and momentum for our guys. And so that's what I think I did in those moments. It wasn't predetermined or anything. It was just on the fly. But like I said, when we're down like we were, and we needed just momentum to be able to pull the ball down and honestly lower my shoulder a couple times, like, I think it was good for our team. And, you know, looking back on it, man, it was just, it's part of the game, but it's momentum, and we needed that. So,
and so I'll give you one last one of my time with Purdy, and I'm going to include a little bit of me with this and sort of my question to him. But it's just a little bit kind of about how Brock Purdy, in essence, has a great attitude about where he is in the NFL, who he is, and why his absolute flatliner demeanor really serves him well. And I think going into the Super Bowl is really going to serve him well.
I remember I sat right in here with you after your first game against Miami, and I said to you, you're playing Tom Brady in your first NFL start, and you said, that's cool. He's been playing football longer than I've been alive. And I constantly am interested in the fact that nothing really seems to bother you or overwhelm you, or you don't make the game too big. But now you're the last pick in the draft, and you're playing in the Super Bowl in your second year, and the fate of this franchise is on your shoulders. So how do you feel about that?
Honestly, like I have, you know, since I've stepped in this whole role last year when Jimmy went down, it was, how can I do my job really well for this team, be consistent? I know I have a really good team around me, got great play calling, great organization, and if I can just do my job well, everything will fall into place how it needs to. And honestly, going into this last game of the season for everyone, that's my mindset too. It shouldn't change. It's not like, all right, I made it to the Super Bowl, now I got to start acting uncharacteristic and make all these crazy plays. It's, how can I do my job well? If I need to improvise, I'll improvise. But at the end of the day, find a way to win, just like we did today. So,
be kind of cool to play Mahomes, huh?
Yeah, it's going to be sweet.
Yeah,
it's going to be cool. I mean, watching that guy since I was in high school, really, and the way he's taken over the NFL, it's been fun to watch. So, to have an opportunity to go up against him for Super Bowl, man, doesn't get any better than that.
Hey, listen, thank you so much. Yes, sir. Really appreciate it. I'll see you in Vegas.
Yes, sir.
With spring Black Friday deals at the Home Depot, you can give your lawn or garden beds a pop of color and protection. Right now, get a special buy on Scott's Earth Grow Mulch, 5 bags for just $10. Help your soil retain moisture longer with color that lasts up to 12 months. shop Spring Black Friday deals for a special buy on Scott's Earth Grow Mulch 5 bags for just $10 at the Home Depot. How doers get more done. Color selection varies by store. Limit 60 bags per customer while supplies last.
With the Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card, you can earn unlimited 2% cash rewards on purchases you want and purchases you need. That means you earn on what you want, like trying out that new workout class, and 2% cash rewards on what you need, like a foam roller for your sore muscles. That's the beauty of the Active Cash Credit Card. It's ready when you are, with unlimited 2% cash rewards. The Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card. That's real life ready. Terms apply. Learn more at wellsfargo.com/activecash.
So, Miles, I am a little fascinated by this edition of the Kansas City football team. And I'll tell you the biggest reason why. I was in Germany 10 weeks ago, 12 weeks ago, whatever it was, early November. And I saw the 21-14 win over the Miami Dolphins in Frankfurt. And they weren't playing very well offensively at all. And I've told the story here and in my column, and I told it again in Football Morning in America, a post-championship game edition. But twice after that game, Patrick Mahomes pigeonholed me and said, "We will get this offense fixed. I promise you." And it sounds funny after a game in which they scored 17 points to extol the virtues of this offense. But there's a reason why I think that, and look, this defense and Steve Spagnuolo and so many people on that defense deserve credit. But I think Patrick Mahomes basically saying, almost 3 months ago, we're going to figure out this offense. Well, he was right. They've scored 70 points in 3 postseason games. They got Isaiah Pacheco averaging 85 yards a game in the postseason. You finally have a receiver you can trust, a wide receiver in Rashee Rice, who owned the game against Miami in the playoffs. And then obviously Travis Kelce, 11 targets, 11 catches, 116 yards in the AFC championship game. And I'll tell you one thing. If Travis Kelce doesn't go into the Hall of Fame on roller skates, man, this guy, everyone in the stadium knew that he was going to get the ball early and often in this game. And still, every time Mahomes threw to him, every time, he was perfect. So, I don't know. I sort of look at it, Miles, and I think, I just was impressed with their offense, even though they only scored 17 points in this game.
They made enough critical plays where they controlled everything that was happening, even in the second half when they couldn't really get anything going. And part of that is because the Kansas City defense has been so good, and I would say it's been elite in the postseason. I mean, they made the critical plays when they needed to make them. And, yeah, Buffalo got a bunch of yards last week, but – when it came down to it, they made the stops. And, you know, when you look at what that defense did against Lamar Jackson, unbelievable. But
yeah,
the fact that Patrick Mahomes was able to start that game just going down the field, started 10-10 passing. You know, they go for it on 4th-and-3. And, you know, I've watched enough Chiefs over the last however many years to know that when it's 4th-and-3 in those situations, they love the sprint right pass. And it looked like Baltimore also kind of figured that out, because first read in the flat was covered, and then Mahomes has to go all the way back kind of across the field to Kelce. But what does he do but throw an absolute strike to Travis Kelce? And Kelce reaches out and just makes a great catch. I mean, it was two of those dudes, and two of the best to ever play at their positions, just executing at the highest level. And the same thing happened when he throws to Travis Kelce in the front right corner of the end zone, covered by Kyle Hamilton, first team all pro Kyle Hamilton.
What a throw, man.
Yeah, because Kyle Hamilton, what is Kyle Hamilton going to do in that situation, man? I mean, he is covering Travis Kelce. Travis Kelce is covered. But He uncovers because Mahomes throws an absolutely perfect throw, the only place he can put it. And it's just, and Kelce makes the catch. It was just unbelievable to see those two guys and how well they are connected, make the plays that they made. And so, yeah, I could not have been more impressed with what they put out there. And it was another situation, Peter, where the final score was not necessarily indicative of how that game went, because the Chiefs went for it on fourth down again, you know, and they didn't get it that time with Isaiah Pacheco running up the middle. If you kick a field goal, then that game maybe looks a little bit different in terms of the final score there. But yeah, it's funny. I mean, on Christmas Day, I remember sitting at my mom's house and watching that game against the Raiders and thinking, man, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know if this team's going to make it out of the first round of playoffs. They can't do anything offensively. They have no reliable receivers. You know, even Travis Kelce's not making the plays you expect him to make. And I don't know if it's you flip the switch or what, but or maybe that week after clinching the AFC West, you know, they came out here to LA and they didn't play guys. You know, Travis Kelce rested even though he had the chance to get to 1,000 yards, and Mahomes didn't play and all that. And maybe that week just got their minds right, you know, to say, no, we can do this once we get into the postseason. Whatever it is, it works. And when you've got elite guys at head coach, quarterback, tight end, you know, defensive lineman and Chris Jones, all those young dudes in the, on that defense who have, you know, continued to rise, and they're still going to mostly be together next year because they're all so young. And an elite defensive coordinator in Spagnuolo. I mean, this is the kind of result you're going to get. And I couldn't be more impressed with the run that they've had.
You know, Miles, I found myself thinking, I watched this game in the press box at Levi's Stadium, and I thought at three or four different moments of the game that there's a difference between being a really good team and being a good big game team when you need to be experienced in the art of playing a big game. And again, I'm going to point to four things for Baltimore that bothered me quite a bit. And I'm not saying they're all because guys didn't, you know, capitalize on the moment. But the four things that really kind of bothered me, Kyle Van Noy. Here's a guy who's played for Bill Belichick, who is one of the most trusted veterans in the NFL. Truly, 32 years old, played 10 years. I really have great admiration for Kyle Van Noy. I don't care how angry you get at somebody on the field. You know that if you take your helmet and forcibly headbutt Travis Kelce with two officials standing right there, that you're going to get a 15-yard flag. And again, that... And I'm sure that Kyle Van Noy today regrets what happened. And that's why it is so odd to have seen him do that. Just like I think it was odd to see Lamar Jackson throw for Isaiah Likely into what turned out to be triple coverage in the shallow end zone on a vital, vital drive that for all intents and purposes ended Baltimore's true chances to win this game. One other one, Roquan Smith, who I think is taken over really as the leader of this defense after he got signed to, they traded for him a year ago and he got signed to a big contract and deserves it. He's a great player, great leader. I understand why he jumped offside. Because at that point, it's the clock late in the game. It's the clock that's important, the most important thing. But to barrel into an offensive lineman, send him flying, and get not a 5-yard penalty, but a 15-yard penalty, insane. It's just not smart to do. And obviously, look, Zay Flowers, he's a rookie, but a taunting penalty in a crucial time in the game, fumbling, getting the ball punched out at the 10-inch line, on a play that would have brought you to within a field goal. The Ravens did not meet the moment, Miles.
No, not at all. And there's also the play where defensive lineman like clubbed Patrick Mahomes in the face. Like I found myself watching that game just saying, what are the Ravens doing? And it was just undisciplined crap. Like just stuff I did not expect to see from a John Harbaugh team, right? I mean, this is a team that has been arguably the best team in football all year, right? They went to Santa Clara and kicked the crap out of the 49ers on Christmas night. Like this is the team that you said, okay, this is their year, right? And so the undisciplined stuff that really bothered me. I didn't understand what was going on there. And like, why was Justin Tucker in the space of Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce before the game? Like,
What is that all about? It's just weird.
what are you
Weird.
practicing with a T from the end zone? Like, I didn't understand any of that. It was like some weird thing to maybe try and get into their head. But I mean, Peter, how many games have you attended? And when have you ever seen a kicker getting in the way of quarterbacks warming up for a game? Like, what the hell was going on?
I
So
forget who said this, Miles, but I think it might have been Danny Woodhead or somebody on social media talked about how two things. Each team has one side of the field,
yeah.
and a kicker generally might cheat over 10 yards or whatever, or 5 yards if, he's trying a long field goal. But there would never be a reason for a kicker to have his tee at the goal line. Never. There's no sensible explanation for that. And I don't blame Mahomes and Kelce for kicking it, throwing it, and all that. It was, and again, Travis, Justin Tucker is one of the nicest guys I've ever met covering football. But that just seemed like, for whatever reason, a provocative act by either him or by the Ravens. I don't know. But anyway, that was odd. And, I found myself also thinking, Miles, about the Ravens. Everything that happens to you in life becomes part of who you are. And you see Patrick Mahomes playing so well in these big games. But honestly, a game in the regular season, on Christmas in San Francisco or in Santa Clara, when the Ravens go there, big, big game, big game. Not even close to the magnitude of a championship game, or not even close, honestly, to a divisional game. It's certainly not close to a Super Bowl. And so I think part of me, I found myself thinking at the end of this game, the Ravens are going to be better for this. The Ravens needed this. Lamar Jackson really has not played in games of this magnitude in 4 years. So I'm not throwing the Ravens out the window. I think the Ravens are going to be good for a while. Lamar is obviously going to be good for a long time. I just think they didn't meet the moment, didn't respond, and they'll be back. But man, they made some fairly big errors in this game.
Oh, but will they be back, Peter? I mean, that's the difficult thing with the AFC is at this point we feel like, all right, Mahomes, he gonna be there. We know that, nobody's been able to take him out except for Joe Burrow and Tom Brady when it comes to the postseason. And Joe Burrow wasn't there this year. And so I fully expect if Joe Burrow is healthy, that the Bengals are going to continue to be one of the elite teams in the AFC, and they are also happen to be in the Ravens division. So like that's difficult. I think Steelers are always going to be a threat. They're in the Ravens division. I don't know what Cleveland's going to be, so forget that. But like, look, you got Houston. CJ Stroud's going to get better. That's another team. Trevor Lawrence, yeah, they're inconsistent, but the Jaguars are kind of a threat. They should continue to get better. Like Miami's not going anywhere. I don't think Buffalo's going anywhere. So The AFC is going to be really, really tough to get out of. And, you know, if Mike McDonald
Great
ends up
point.
Getting one of these
Great
head
point.
Coaching jobs, like, yeah. then that takes away something else that you have there, which is your defensive coordinator, who has been a tremendous game planner and a tremendous person who makes the in-game adjustments, too. So this was the opportunity for the Baltimore Ravens, and Lamar Jackson was not good enough. And I don't think their offensive game plan was good enough either. You know, the way Todd Monken was calling plays, I just don't really understand why we didn't see more designed runs for Lamar Jackson, especially after the way he converted that fourth down in his own territory, going 20-plus yards. Like, let him do his thing. You got to let Lamar Jackson cook a little bit there. So it just, for whatever reason, it didn't work out, you know. And that throw that he made into the end zone to Isaiah Likely, just inexplicable. I don't know what you're looking at there, man. Like, that's a horrible decision. And I'm not saying that Lamar Jackson's all of a sudden going to be bad. Don't get me wrong, but it's going to be difficult for Baltimore to get back to this spot. It just is.
You make a really, really good point about the depth of this conference. And the two things you said that cannot be minimized: Joe Burrow's going to be back, and Jim Harbaugh is in town. And that just makes it harder to get out of the AFC.
Yeah.
So I think you're right. I think, and I'm not saying this is going to be Dan Marino. Remember, well, yeah, you weren't even born yet. But
sorry.
But the first Super Bowl I ever covered, 49ers Dolphins nearby Palo Alto. And what I'll never forget, leaving the stadium that night, the old Stanford Stadium, that the theme by everyone is, well, Marino lost, but he'll be back. That was the second year in the NFL. Marino never got back. And so I think you're right. But I want to say one other thing about this game, that there's a pretty decent chance that Kansas City might not be moving on without the best play of L'Jarius Sneed's life.
Yeah.
And first, let me preface this by saying that, so L'Jarius Sneed, I think everybody thinks, oh, it's a good NFL corner. Let me tell you something about L'Jarius Sneed. And that is, in the first 18 games of this season, 17 games of the regular season and the playoff game against Miami, in the first 18 games for Kansas City, L'Jarius Sneed did not allow a touchdown in man coverage all season. And for today, in today's football, with all that, the amazing thing was that L'Jarius Sneed saved the day and had the presence of mind, I'm going to try to punch this ball out as Zay Flowers lunges for the end zone. That's what champions do. That's what championship teams do. And I love that aspect. And I love that aspect of watching Kansas City play football. This is not their best team by any stretch.
No.
But you just try beating them, you know, in a very, very big game. That is a tough challenge.
You know, Peter, the cliche obviously is defense wins championships, right? And, you know, that's when Kansas City was going into the postseason, it was kind of like, well, you still have 15, right? And you have an elite defense. Like, this is not the best Chiefs team that we've seen in the Mahomes era, but it certainly is the best defense. And that's what's given them a chance throughout the entire regular season in a lot of these games, where, like, the offense just couldn't get things done. And, you know, all of a sudden maybe you have a turnover or you just get enough stops and, like, the Chiefs were able to win 11 games. But once you get to the postseason, I mean, this unit has been great. You know, they have made the stops when they needed to. And, yeah, you had that really, really cold game against the Dolphins, sure. But it's not like Miami got anything easily in that wild card round game. And I would kind of say the same about the Buffalo game. They weren't really getting things easily either. So then you get to yesterday, and it all came together, you know. And, you know, whether it's Sneed punching the ball out, you know, guys making the stops when they needed to. The only play that Baltimore really, really got off, you know, for a score was that crazy good throw that Lamar Jackson had to make after he was almost sacked. Like, That play should have gone as a sack. And the only reason it wasn't is because Lamar Jackson is a completely elite player. And then you had
he's Gumby.
A receiver.
He is Gumby, I'm telling you.
It's like when you get a hold of, when you get to him, you better hold on for dear life. Because otherwise he's gonna escape. I could not be more impressed with the job that Steve Spagnuolo has done with that group and just how well they played against Baltimore. Because again,
I got a really good email, and you hear of this a lot. Really, I got an email about Spagnuolo on Sunday night, and this emailer asked, "Shouldn't Steve Spagnuolo be considered for the Hall of Fame?" Because when you look back on the Giants beating the great Patriots teams, he had such a huge impact in that period of history for the Giants in beating the great Patriots. But look, coordinators, it's not that they couldn't make the Hall of Fame, but it's that they haven't made the Hall of Fame. And so I just look at it. I doubt he ever would, but it's a really, really interesting question to ponder, especially after watching how in a championship game, once again, he figured a way to shut down a great quarterback and win the game.
If they dominate San Francisco in this Super Bowl coming up, then I think that case gets a lot better. That case becomes really good. Because, I mean, that'd be three Super Bowls in 4 years, right, for the Chiefs. And then obviously the one in 2007 where you're stopping, I mean, one of the greatest offenses of all time in Tom Brady and a completely undefeated team to that game. So, yeah, like that's – he'd at least have a case in my mind.
Yeah.
Doers, mowing season is here with Spring Black Friday savings at the Home Depot. Right now, you can get gas-like power with the Ryobi 40-volt push mower for just $329. With a runtime of nearly an hour, it's the perfect mower to tackle your half-acre lawn without a trip to the gas station. Just push and mow. Your grass won't wait, so buy it online and pick it up in-store to get out there sooner. Get gas-like power this spring with the Ryobi 40-volt push mower just $329 during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
With the Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card, you can earn unlimited 2% cash rewards on purchases you want and purchases you need. That means you earn on what you want, like trying out that new workout class, and 2% cash rewards on what you need, like a foam roller for your sore muscles. That's the beauty of the Active Cash Credit Card. It's ready when you are, with unlimited 2% cash rewards. The Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card. That's real life ready. Terms apply. Learn more at wellsfargo.com/activecash.
Miles, let's take a moment and just give a sort of a 10,000 foot observation preview of the Super Bowl. And I just wrote down a couple of things that I just wanted to throw out to you just to ask you your thought. But the first one essentially is following up on Spagnuolo. They're going to do something to Kyle Shanahan that he's not expecting. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it is, but I do think that Kyle Shanahan's bywords and watchwords with the team as they prepare for this game, if it were me, expect the unexpected.
That's
the first thing. And you know, I wonder how you look at that matchup, you know, Shanahan's offense versus Spagnuolo and that defense.
Well, I think we've seen that if you get Brock Purdy off of his game early, there are going to be opportunities, whether they are for turnovers, whether it's to just knock off his rhythm a little bit. You know, you have to play physically against the 49ers. I think we all know that. And frankly, the Chiefs have been the more physical team in all of their matchups so far in the postseason, I think. So, look, I think that Steve Spagnuolo will have something for Kyle Shanahan's offense and with Brock Purdy. The last time they played each other in Santa Clara, it did not go well for the 49ers at all.
Yeah.
So I think that that's something that, you know, both teams will take a look at. But yeah, I think knowing that there are some vulnerabilities in Brock Purdy's game, I might give a slight advantage there to the Chiefs defense versus the 49ers offense.
Yeah. The other thing that I wanted to bring up is that in the two most recent times I've covered a Kansas City game, they pull the play out of nowhere. The first one against New England, Matt Nagy brought to Andy Reid this play from the Ivy League in the 40s, and I'm not kidding. And they ran it and they scored a touchdown. And then after the game in Buffalo, Reed was telling me about a play they hadn't used in 7 years since Alex Smith was the quarterback pre-Mahomes. And it was sort of a screen pass in the flat to Travis Kelce. And so I don't know what is going to be called in this game. But Andy Reid, Matt Nagy, and that staff is very good at finding two or three plays that when they happen, you say, we were totally unprepared for that. So it's a little bit of the inverse of what we were just talking about with Spagnuolo. But I think Andy Reid and his brain trust is going to find something that is going to say to Steve Wilks, here's something that not only didn't you prepare for, but you couldn't have prepared for it.
Yes. And, you know, I think the first half performance by the San Francisco defense in that game against the Lions was alarming for a number of reasons, but mostly because they gave up the most rushing yards in a first half of any game since Kyle Shanahan has become the head coach of the 49ers since 2017. That, to me, would be something that's very alarming. And I don't necessarily know how you fix that within 2 weeks, especially when it's Andy Reid on the other side and you're giving him some extra time to prepare. Like, that is not necessarily the best situation for the 49ers there. So that, in that way, if it's 49ers defense versus Chiefs offense, I think the clear advantage goes to the Chiefs offense, given the high level that that unit's been playing at, and given the fact that we know Andy Reid's an elite offensive schemer.
It's a very good, all very good points. Miles, I think we're done. And I think I'd like to give a little bit of preview for next week. We're both going to be on the scene in Las Vegas.
Viva.
We're going to record our podcast on Tuesday morning in Vegas. I'll have a guest from there as well. But I'm really kind of looking forward to the weirdness of a Super Bowl in Las Vegas.
Me too.
And, you know, reading a lot about it, one of the things that's going to be weird is Las Vegas is the star of the show, and yet all the people there who are there for the NFL, the two teams, are going to be 25 miles out of town because the NFL doesn't want the teams to be frequenting the casinos. It's just, it's one of the oddest things. You want to embrace Las Vegas. You also want to keep Las Vegas at 14 arms lengths during Super Bowl week. Kind of odd, isn't it?
Not only that, Peter, but you're going to have the Kansas City Chiefs using the Las Vegas Raiders facility to practice. I mean, if
I love that.
Is weird, that is so weird.
I mean, love
like,
that.
Two great rivals in the NFL, and one is using that team's facility. I think that that's pretty hilarious.
Yeah.
And it's going to be 49ers in Chiefs end zones in the Raiders stadium. If you're a Raiders fan, that's got to burn you up a little bit.
Oh, my. I didn't think of the 49ers. That was great. And by the way, we were, what, 20 minutes away from the first game of the season being Detroit and Kansas City, and the last game of the season being Detroit and Kansas City. And look, I want to give a shout out to the NFL scheduling department, because I remember last May when the schedule came out, there's a lot of people. I even asked Dan Campbell about this in training camp. There's a lot of people who said, "Oh my God, the Lions in the first game, this could be 28-3 at the half." People all over America are going to be turning off their TVs. They don't want to watch this game. Why'd you put the Lions in the game? Well, I think the Lions are not going to be questioned anymore, because I'll tell you, Miles, there's a little postscript that we didn't really didn't get into. What's the scariest offense to stop right now in the NFL? It's Jared Goff and the Detroit Lions. They have so many weapons. And look, Josh Reynolds is going to live in infamy in a lot of people in Detroit for the pass he probably should have caught on 4th and 2, and then the drive-killing pass that bounced off his chest, a perfect pass by Goff, also in the second half. And look, unfortunately that happened, but I will just say that Detroit offense, with Ben Johnson calling the plays and so many good weapons, that was a fearsome group by the end of the season.
Yeah, it was. I'm curious to see what happens next year, assuming Ben Johnson gets a head coaching job, and who is going to take over that role of calling the plays, or Dan Campbell might go back to it because he was doing it during the first year of his tenure before they officially promoted Ben Johnson to being offensive coordinator. But yeah, that really was a good Lions team, you know, and I think that they deserve their flowers for making it to the NFC Championship game despite not winning.
Very true. Miles Simmons, we'll see you in Las Vegas. Thank you. And I'd like to thank everybody for experiencing another episode of the Peter King podcast. Maybe some of you watch it, some of you listen, whatever. But I truly appreciate it. Thank you. And we'll be back next week, and we'll be setting the scene from Sin City. Have a good week, everybody.
Bring on spring projects with Spring Black Friday savings from The Home Depot. With free delivery on over 2 million items, you can bring on the spring cleaning, the patio decorating, and the front yard gardening. And if you need it fast, get same-day delivery on thousands of products like fertilizer and seeds to keep your yard looking beautiful. Bring on the spring doing and spring your way only at The Home Depot. How doers get more done. Order select in-stock items by 4 p.m. subject to availability.
With the Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card, you can earn unlimited 2% cash rewards on purchases you want and purchases you need. That means you earn on what you want, like trying out that new workout class, and 2% cash rewards on what you need, like a foam roller for your sore muscles. That's the beauty of the Active Cash Credit Card. It's ready when you are, with unlimited 2% cash rewards. The Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card. That's real life ready. Terms apply. Learn more at wellsfargo.com/activecash.